Auburn keeps winning, but the style points, they're not quite there. Let's talk about it.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast, live edition, with my two guys, Zach Blackerby, Daryl Dapprich, and we are ready to get after it. We're going to talk about, obviously, talk about the best subject at hand right now, and that's Auburn basketball. A lot of people a little bit freaking out, I feel like. Maybe overreacting. I don't know. We'll talk about it. Is Auburn not peaking at the right time? I think there's some stuff that we can explain as to why you see some of the performances you see, and then talk about the teams that Auburn's beating. And then, hey, let's just look at the rest of the schedule and what we can expect the rest of the season as we close it out. But before we get started, we got to give a shout out real quick. You guys like salsa? What do y'all think about salsa?
Yeah, I love salsa.
Well, if you love salsa, you need to check out Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. Use coupon code the barn 25 at UncleKeithsRedSauce.com and try it out. It's a fresh, no preservatives, no additives, good salsa with a southern kick. You can get it at Publix across the state of Alabama, all the Piggly Wigglies in the Birmingham area. Just about everywhere you go in the state of Alabama, you can find some. And if you can't find it in your grocery store, go on the website and you can buy in bulk and save. And then you get to use the coupon code and save as well. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, it's good, y'all. Guys, how we feeling?
Better after that salsa read, that's for sure.
I'm fired up, man.
I thought you meant, did I like the salsa dance? And I answered it too quickly. I should have just waited, you know?
Yeah, it's you can salsa dance while you're eating it. I mean, you can eat salsa while you salsa dance. It's good stuff. But another thing that's really good right now is that's still Auburn basketball. They just, dadgummit, they just keep winning. No matter how it looks, no matter the style points, Auburn still keeps winning. But there are some folks that seem to be concerned. And I want to get y'all's thoughts. You see it. I'm worried we're not peaking. I'm worried we're not this. We're not winning like we should. I just want to get your overall thoughts on the things you're hearing, and then maybe your opinion on how you feel about the way the team's been performing the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Daryl and I talked about this a lot last night, about how there's a little bit of, I guess there's two sides of the coin, where the expectation for Auburn basketball, like, that bar is way higher than it ever has been, which is the goal anytime you try to build a program, and that's part of being the number one team. But also, I think it's maybe folks who feel that way only watch Auburn basketball, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But when you look throughout the SEC, like, a lot of good teams lost yesterday. A lot of good teams lose every Saturday in the SEC, and midweek games matter. And there's a lot of good teams that lose midweek games pretty often. And Auburn's only lost one SEC game so far this season, and it was against the number two team in college basketball. And so to me, it's like, I understand Auburn's not playing their best, but nobody's able to play their best every single game. And the fact that Auburn is able to play maybe 60 or 70% of what they're capable of doing and still win against, like, eventual tournament teams, I don't know. I don't really feel that bad about it.
Yeah, I think the narrative is not a true narrative, because people seem to just remember the most recent thing they saw. But if you take the last 3 weeks in a capsule and say Auburn's boat raced Oklahoma, they beat a good Vanderbilt team in a house of horrors, and they beat the number three team of the country, who was number two at the time, at their gym, let's pump the brakes a little bit. So it's what's happened is the expectations of Auburn basketball flip-flopped when the conference season started. Everybody thought the non-conference part of the schedule was going to be the death march. And Auburn basically goes through that, other than at Duke, and just smokes people. What people need to realize is now looking back on it, the non-conference portion of Auburn's schedule was less challenging than the conference is. Yeah. If Auburn was playing in the ACC or somewhere that even in the Big 12 or a lesser basketball conference and struggling to win like this, maybe I'd be a little more concerned. But they're playing in the premier conference in America. This is what it goes back to when Zach says people are just watching Auburn. When the ACC and the Big East were in their heydays and they were putting two or three teams in the Final Four every year, if you went through those leagues and just beat people by 7 and 8 and only lost one game, they'd hang a banner in your arena. Oh, yeah. People don't understand that, how hard it was to win in those elite conferences when Georgetown and St. John's and Villanova, and then in the ACC and the North Carolinas and the Dukes. This is what we are seeing right now, the present day SEC. You win and you're not – yeah, there's some things they got to clean up. They're being a little bit sloppy. Maybe they're not playing as smart as they need to. But despite that, they're winning basketball games in the premier basketball conference in the country.
Yeah. Dap, you mentioned something, and Zach, you said it too, about you're beating eventual tournament teams. I'm just looking at just ESPN.com's feature on, you know, teams on the bubble, last four byes, last four in, first four out, all that good stuff. Your last four byes, Texas, that was a game I feel like people were like, I didn't really like that performance. Vanderbilt, they took the lead at one point in time. They're one of the last four in. Arkansas is one of the last four in. Oklahoma is one of the first four out. Georgia
is Arkansas in now?
It just says one of the last four in on the bubble is what it says.
Probably because of that win over Missouri launched them up a seed line. I mean, that's a ranked team they beat, so that probably bumped them a little bit.
But the thing is, just like Cal said, any game they have the rest of the season is like if you win a couple of the games down the stretch, you're probably going to jump in. So they control their own destiny. I say all that to say, you think about if Auburn's a number one seed, okay, you're going to play in the round of 32, you're going to play an 8 or 9 seed. Are there many teams that you feel like that are going to be on the 8-9 line that are going to be able to consistently perform at the level of Georgia, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Texas, like those type teams that Auburn's, you know, not won by 20, you know, but won by, you know, double digits. I think that's a little bit of perspective we're losing. Like you got to think about, if you're thinking about, we're getting close to March, you're thinking about tournament season, these teams that Auburn's still winning by, you know, big margins. I mean, the spread for the Georgia game was only 14. I think we won by 12. So we just about covered the spread there. But these are teams.
Let's do this. So the second we, assuming Auburn's the number one seed or a number one seed, which I'd be shocked if they weren't at this point. Joe Lunardi's latest bracketology, the 8-9 matchup in the South, he has Auburn playing Gonzaga and New Mexico. Is Georgia better than those teams?
I haven't seen much. I feel like Georgia would beat New Mexico. I haven't seen much of Gonzaga this year, but I know that they typically play no one. And so they didn't. They lost a non-conference game that was kind of surprising. I'm drawing a blank on it though.
But I think so. I think Georgia and Arkansas, when they're playing well, is better than these teams. And then another 8-9 matchup is Oregon and Baylor. I agree.
I think Gonzaga, Oregon, and Baylor would finish probably – those three teams would finish anywhere between 5th and 7th in the SEC. So they're probably – yeah, Oregon just smoked Wisconsin, who's a pretty good basketball team. Gonzaga, typically because of their coach, when you get in the tournament, coaching matters. Anywhere between 5th and 7th, I think that they could finish.
They're better than Missouri?
Oregon, I'd put them on the same level as – I'd put Oregon similar A&M? To Missouri.
Kentucky?
A&M starting – yeah.
Okay.
Remember who Oregon beat on a neutral floor.
Who's that?
Early in the year, Alabama.
That's true.
Yeah, that was also like.
They just beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin, who was number 13 in the country. So, I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think they're comparable. I don't think the argument is, are they that much better, that much worse? I think your second round game is going to be like an Arkansas, a Georgia, a Vanderbilt. That's what I think.
That's the kind of, that's the direction I was going. I feel like the talent level you're going to face in that second round is going to be the talent that you're handling fairly easily.
The other 8-9 matchups, it's for the sake of the conversation, UConn and Utah State. Auburn had the chance to play UConn, but you know they dropped a few games in Maui. And then Creighton and Texas. Of course, Auburn beat Texas.
Yeah.
Not pretty, but Auburn beat Texas earlier this year.
Who just lost to South Carolina.
I'm happy for South Carolina.
I am too, but I'm on board. I'm wondering how it's – there's just no rhyme or reason. I'm wondering how a team that just loses to South Carolina doesn't fall to the first four out when they don't have a stellar resume anyway.
Yeah.
In Texas. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree. AJ Johnson says, who is Alabama? Are they good? They're not bad.
Fun fact, AJ was my roommate for like 3 years.
How about that?
Wow.
How about that? He's got the dirt. AJ, hit us with the dirt in the comments.
Please don't.
No, so I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to preface this by saying this is not conspiratorial, okay? This is not everybody's out to get Auburn, okay? I want you to understand that because I know Zach hates talking about referees.
I'm ready today.
I want to throw something out there and see what you guys think about it. I'm trying to think how to ask this. Auburn seems to me very dependent on how the game is called as to how the flow of the game goes and then how successful they are, especially on defense, from how aggressive they play to all the intensity they have on the defensive end. It seems like it's inconsistently called. Like sometimes it's they let them play, and then when they let us play, Auburn will dominate. And then when they're calling the stuff that they let go in previous games, Auburn can get into trouble like they did against Georgia. I mean, you had Denver Jones, who is he's Velcro. He'll get all over you, and there's not a lot you can do about it unless they start calling the things that they don't call prior. I just want is Auburn more referee dependent than other teams? And it may just be because I watch Auburn more than I watch other
teams.
Go
ahead, Dap.
Well, I think that for 2 or 3 years now, I started to really have a problem with how the foul differential between every time Auburn played, there seemed to be a lopsided foul differential. And then I started to really watch Auburn's style of play. And to be fair, Auburn's style of play, how they guard you, how they defend you, lends itself to getting more fouls called against it. That's one side of the argument. But when I witness things with my own eyes, that's fine, and that can be true. But when I see the other teams doing the same thing against Auburn's bigs or Auburn's guards and it not get called, that's the problem. Auburn has a reputation of they do foul a lot because they're not afraid to try to block shots, to try to get in passing lanes. They are aggressive defensively, and when that happens – you're going to get called for a lot of fouls. My problem is when the other team tries to match that physicality like Georgia did and play a little bit of physical kind of intimidation ball and do things, they don't get called for it. So that's the issue I have is if you're going to call it for Auburn, if anybody watched the St. John's UConn game today, I've always criticized officiating. That's how a game should be officiated between two good teams. They understood the rule of verticality. They let guards reach as long as they didn't slap the hand. See, what the problem is, Auburn's reputation of being very physical and aggressive is allowing officials to call and anticipate what they think they see or is about to happen rather than what happens. And that's the problem.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it on the defensive side of what Auburn does because, like you said, Daryl, they're so physical and so aggressive. And in pretty much every case this season, like, it's been fine. We've had a few situations where it's like, okay, we got a few guys with four fouls, but the depth of what they're able to do and from a rotation standpoint, like, it hasn't bit us yet. The offensive side of things is where I'm like, okay, like, this is a little ridiculous. And it really has to do with Jahni Broome more than anyone else. I mean, he's not getting the calls. And, you know, Brad Law on Village Vice several weeks ago, you know, he put, you know, Jahni Broome, you know, how many free throws he's getting per, you know, 2-point attempt. And, you know, there's a lot of metrics to go into that, but his is like alarmingly lower than everyone else's. And you can say whatever you want about style of play, but and I'm just watching him, like, the dude gets mauled under the basket all the time, and he just doesn't really get the opportunity for that many and ones.
So I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with you, but I want to throw this out there to you. What's one thing we saw Broome do last night? What's one thing we saw Broome do yesterday that felt a little bit different than previous games? Maybe it's from the offense, running the offense, or whatever. What is something that you guys noticed from Broome last night that you feel's been different from previous games, if anything?
Well, he played a lot with his back to the basket. I mean, he was posting people up, and it was because Newell was in his ear the whole game, and so it pissed Broome off, so he wanted the ball in the block.
Love it.
So you would say he probably a little bit more traditional inside big guy.
Yes.
So he took 18 field goals, 18 shots. Three of those were from three. So in reality, he took, let's say, 15 shots inside the arc and got 11 free throw attempts. So that means he was called fouls a lot more as he's playing that more traditional big man pound it role. I feel like last night he kind of got more calls than he typically does. We've seen a lot of the fadeaway. You know, that's hard to get a foul called on you. We've seen a lot of mid-range jumpers. We've seen a lot of, like, you know, the sky hook type stuff where that's meant to create separation. I wonder sometimes style of play.
Go ahead. Rebounding too, though. I mean, it's more than just when he's shooting. It's when he's going for the basketball on both sides of the floor. Like, sometimes it's okay for arms to be extended and sometimes it's not. And it just seems to be inconsistent, and it usually seems to involve Jahni Broome more so than other players, I would think.
Well, I'm going to give you a little nuance to something that might answer this. That helps when you're there in the arena. Where I'm sitting a lot of times, I use the old trick during timeouts. I take my phone and I magnify on a player or Bruce or an official. And one of the things I had a problem with is that there was a possession down the floor where Broome was absolutely getting hammered. He got hammered 2, 3, 4. He had the ball on one possession, and the guy kept hammering him. He didn't get the call. They go to a timeout. Broome goes over to the official and leans in, and they're having a conversation, very cordial conversation. And the official says to Broome, you know, I may have missed it. I'll watch it. And I'm telling you, after that, every whistle when he got touched, a foul was called on him.
Oh.
So don't underestimate the way you approach it, too, because he didn't throw his hands up in the air and get frustrated coming down the floor when he should have gotten the whistle. And he waited till the timeout, and he walked over to the official, and it wasn't animated. He didn't show him up. I zoomed in, and that official shook his head, and it wasn't Don Daly, of course, because Don Daly was probably fixing his hair in the monitor. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you guys, after that, he got a quick whistle. Go back and watch in that point of the game how many fouls he got called for him after that happened.
Daryl, who's your favorite ref? Who's your favorite ref to call a basketball game?
I mean, really, like?
Yeah.
Or the guy that called the game today, he's a Big East official. But my least favorite is my man, Pat Adams. Doug Shouse the second. TV Teddy Valentine is third, and then Don My Hair Looks Great Daily is fourth, and we get three of the four all the time.
Sure, you know who my favorite is?
Who
the ones that I don't know their name?
That's yeah. you like the Russian dude, the guy that sounds like there's a guy that sounds like a James Bond villain in a Bond movie. And he's got three names. It's hyphenated. Vladimir is his name. You don't want to cross that dude. He's a Bond villain.
There you go. I want to go back a little bit. So you agree or disagree about Auburn is possibly a little bit more reliant on how the game's called than others. Am I just way out of bounds there?
I mean, I don't agree with it. I do think there's more ebbs and flows with it. But, I mean, if Auburn had more than one loss in conference play, I'd agree with you. But clearly they've been fine. So I don't think I agree.
All right.
I agree to the extent that it's not so lopsided that it might benefit Auburn, but it seems to be any game that Auburn's in, the games last 2 hours and 40 minutes, and there's a ton of fouls called, and it's on both teams. Like, they're trying to keep control of the game, harness the game, control the game, and that's what hurts ebb and flow. Let the number one team in the nation play. Let them play. That's all I'm saying.
I like it. What were your thoughts on the quad tech?
Well, it wasn't a good call because I think there needs to be some sort of stronger penalty for the instigator. All four did something. Right. You're reviewing it. And so I think
that figure out who started it.
There has to be, it has to be weighted. You can't just say, okay, they all four did something, so they all four get texts. I think the instigator deserves a little bit more of a punishment than the other three. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like anything bad happened. But it's just like, okay, all right. You know, on the box score, we'll put a T next to all these guys' names and let's just keep playing. Like, there's no punishment for anything.
Yeah. It was stupid because it woke Auburn up. I'm going to tell you that right now. That was the stupidest thing they did because it absolutely woke them up.
Mm-hmm. I was actually proud of Denver. I'm glad Denver got a tech. That actually made me feel he's quiet a lot. He kind of keeps his mouth shut. I was proud. I was proud he stuck his chest out there and didn't get bullied. He fought back a little bit. Yeah, I kind of
good
dug
for Denver.
That.
Good for Denver.
I want to another thing. It's been kind of going around in my head, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. So this year, it's really not much of a question that Auburn has been just incredible on the road away from Neville Arena. And then at times, some of the games where they've looked, lethargic or not as intense, and there's been some games that are closer than they should, are at home, which you would think it would be the absolute opposite. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Do you think that this team at times takes the crowd for granted? In other words, they're going to be so much of a factor that maybe we don't have to take each play as serious as we have to on the road. We don't have to focus in and be locked in on every single play because Neville Arena is such a tough place to play. I don't know. I may just be the way things have played out this year, but I'm just curious if you think that may have anything to do with it at all.
I think it's impossible to know for sure, and it could be just the way that things have played out. I mean, Auburn's schedule is what it is, but this team is so emotional. I kind of get the vibe that this team likes it when they're behind enemy territory, when it's them against the world, and there's thousands of people booing them and cheering against them. I think they feed off of that. I think they love that.
Being the bad guy.
I think so. I think so. Saying like, hey, we don't care about you or your feelings or anything that you're trying to do that doesn't benefit us. Like, I think they like that. So I don't know if it's them taking Neville for granted. I mean, they've only lost one game in Neville this season to the number two team in college basketball. But I think I'd rather have it this way than the other way, because in past seasons, it's been, okay, Auburn's good at home, and then on the road, it's just survive, and then you know, the tournament's not played in Neville, obviously, and that's kind of when we had these early exits. I think this is a recipe, another ingredient for this recipe for this team to go on a run.
Dat, what do you think?
I think there's something to what you're saying, and when you brought this point up pre-show, it really made a lot of sense to me, is that the execution, the focus doesn't seem to be there as much because I think they take that place for granted, the Neville mystique. And I also think it's a show. When you come to Neville, it's showtime. It just is. And there's this expectation to entertain. And I think some of that comes with the forced passes and the forced shots and maybe not be playing within yourself and playing within the offense and trying to do too much because you're trying to put on a show. I will tell you this. The greatest stat that Auburn has going for it right now going into the postseason is its record on neutral floors. We can talk about how great they are on the road. We can talk about how they've only lost one game at home. they have yet to be beat on a neutral floor. And that is where postseason basketball begins and ends.
They play a lot of games on neutral court in the postseason, from what I understand. I think they play nearly all of them.
All of them.
All of them.
If not all, most are definitely playing on a neutral court in the postseason, from what I understand. Right. Now, they may not feel like it, because I feel like it's going to be a big Auburn crowd, because it's probably cheaper to go to some of these than it is to go to Neville. I think, Zach, you hit on something, and I guess I didn't think about it. This team and their makeup, it does seem like they like to be the villain. It's like they're almost embracing the villain role. You know, Auburn's this, they're not supposed to be here. They're playing above their head. They're all these narratives that we hear. Oh, they're not beating teams by enough. Oh, they're only good at home. They're taking all these narratives, I feel like, and using it as ammo. And that's why they thrive when they go into enemy territory, or they go away from Neville Arena. I think that is plays a huge role in this.
Well, listen, you guys both have just nailed it. And here's the reason why I believe what you're saying is not just opinion. Tell me what you consider to be one of the most impressive early season wins for Auburn, where we all went, wow, this team could be really good. What was it? Houston. What was the game? Houston. What happened right before Houston? What happened? Say it. The FAA got involved. Before a bunch of people started getting laid off, the FAA got involved, and Auburn became the national punchline, and commentators were talking about it, and broadcasters were talking about it, the fight on the plane. And what did they do? They circled the wagons and went to Houston, and that's not a neutral site. It was in the Toyota Center, and there was a lot of Houston fans there, and beat their eyes out. So I'm telling you, there is something to that us against the world mentality. Also, don't underestimate how hard it is to get a ticket in Neville. So people do travel and go see them in Nashville and Athens and witnesses, because that's the only time you can see them for less than the outrage. And so it does feel like, okay, we're on the road, but oh, there's some familiarity. Look at that pocket of fans over there. And a neutral floor, get ready, because it's even going to be twice as much than on a road.
Oh, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's gonna be fun to see how the rest of the season plays out. You got four games left. Y'all talked about it a little bit last night. It's really hard to pick against them. But I mean, if Auburn can go 3-1 over these next four games, I'm ecstatic. I don't care where the one comes. If Auburn can go 3-1 over the next four games, I hope the one's not Alabama. Let's say they go 2-1 over the next two, and then win the last one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely loss is at A&M. I feel like I'm on an island on that, because everybody else wants to say Kentucky. But
no, you're not. I agree with you, actually.
The reason why everybody wants to say Kentucky is because it's been since 1988 since Auburn's won a basketball game there. But if there, I mean,
streaks. What was the year?
1988.
I wasn't alive yet.
I know. I was 20. A young dad.
I was barely alive.
But streaks
are made to be broken. They're not going to last forever. And if there's ever a team that's going to put it to bed and put it in the cemetery, it's this team. So who knows?
A&M's a lot like Georgia to me. They're physical. They got some bigs that can bang around, and then they got a really good guard. So
they're a better Georgia.
They're a better version of Georgia. That's why I think it could
be. And I think Kentucky is like a not as good version of Alabama. Which we saw yesterday with them playing.
I think that's perfect. Maybe a little bit of a big man.
I think you're perfect, Kyle. I think we're perfect.
I think if you would have put Wade Taylor in Georgia's backcourt last night, that would have been very, very interesting. And he's, you know, that's where Denver Jones is at his best, though. If he just neutralizes him and holds him in check, then that's why Auburn has flourished, because of the way he plays against the other team's best guards.
Which one of these four games is to high drop 25? Because it's happening with one of them. Who is it?
Both road games.
Ruck. Okay. He's going to absolutely be legendary in Ruck. Oh, get ready.
Yeah. Score 30.
I think you're right. He's going to pop.
Yeah.
He's going to pop at Rupp. That's somebody in the comments earlier said to Hodge, kryptonite is a sold out Neville Arena. I don't know what it is.
Sahad doesn't care about you unless you're ranked. If you're ranked, he's like, I'm going to destroy you.
Yeah.
If not, it's like, you're not worth me scoring any points on you unless you're a good team. So sorry.
This George May, he had a really good comment. Have y'all seen Caden Magwood highlights lately?
Mm.
Imagine him and Hyde at the one and the one and two, or just rotating at the one.
He dropped 46 the other night.
Yeah.
He also got thrown out of a game too. So he's going to fit right in.
He's going to fit right in.
He got teed up, got in a fight. He's going to fit right in.
Not until he gets left on the jetway and has to deboard the plane will he fit right in. But me and Zach did a show on him, a little snippet when he signed. And guys, he's a bucket. I mean, it's not just from the outside. He goes to the hole. He's got good size. I mean, that's a really, really sneaky good signing, like top five player in the country. This kid, he's really good.
He's bipolar in the best way. When he goes on the basketball court, he turns into a completely different.
Yeah.
It's like a transformer. He turns into a completely different person, and he's almost scary. Like, you can see it in his eyes. Like, he is I'm going to dominate you. I cannot wait for that kid. I can't wait for that kid to get here.
Yeah. Yep. The future is bright, gentlemen.
The future is very bright, and we have only four games left in this historic regular season. Got to close it out. And we'll be talking about it after every game. So you can catch Zach and Dap live after every game. Where else can they find you, Zach?
Yeah, over at the Barn, thebarnauburn.com. You can sign up for an annual subscription right now. Get $25 off. Do it. It's a blast.
Do it. Dap, where can they find you and love you?
Wednesdays and Fridays on Locked On Auburn with Zach. And then obviously in the Barn doing some in-game stuff. People thought I got arrested, that I got angry at an official because I went dark, but we had to go live, so that's why I stopped contributing. But yeah, love going there and interacting. Yeah, it was.
It's always on the table. So we got to make sure that we're careful. So guys, if you want to, like you said, Zach said earlier, subscribe to thebarnauburn.com. Take $25 off your annual membership, and you can catch me every single day on the Top Button Podcast. Stay button.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.